some info on its current projects?
We're working on projects of trying to establish the organization with more state workers in different facilities. There are some.
This interview originally aired on August 15, 2006 on Richmond Indy Media News. This program airs every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. and is produced by the Richmond Indy Media Center, providing grassroots news coverage in the Richmond area since 2001.
I'm Jeffrey Walker. Glad you were able to join us for our special Labor Day programming, and remember this quote from economist and philosopher Adam Smith. Labor was the first price, the original purchase money that was paid for all things. It was not by gold or by silver, but by labor that all wealth of the world was originally purchased.
WRIR volunteers produced way more than we had time to share with you, and so if you want to hear the longer versions of these samples of what's going on with labor in the old capital of the Confederacy, Richmond, Virginia, you can visit WRIR.org and go to schedule, click on Homespun C-SPAN, Monday at 12 noon, and you'll find links there. That's it for Sprouts. You have been listening to WRIR's Labor Day in the Old Confederacy. The South shall rise again, but not the way they planned. Our contributors this week included over a dozen volunteers at WRIRLP: Aaron Samsel, Denise Naim, Jason Gard, Andrew Large, Jeff Schultes, Anna Edwards, Alan Levenberg, Anna and Zoe Golden, Catherine Kahn, Jeffrey Walker, Kathy Brown, Liz Humes, John Richmond, Matt Beckwith, Bill Farrar, Alyssa Solomon, Gene Pendleton, Ira Kalos, Charles Williams, David Noyes, Gary Moore. Sprouts is distributed and coordinated by Pacifica Radio Network. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact our air traffic controller, Ursula Roydenberg, at ursula@pacifica.org. That's ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Christopher Maxwell at WRIRLP in Richmond, Virginia. Thanks for listening, and see you next week on Sprouts.
And that was Sprouts. This is Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. We're in Santa Cruz, and you could be anywhere around the world. But, hey, listen in for the next 2 hours, and you can jump on top of what's cooking both in Santa Cruz and, who knows, maybe issues further flung than that, particularly if you're interested in the war in Iraq and what's going on there, at least what I've been reading, what I've been thinking about. My name is Robert Norse. Coming up next is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. Stay tuned.
downtown when you're brown. The muffled sound of injustice is drowned out by the boom, boom, boom of tricked out impalas and cherried out mini trucks. As the catcalls of oppression are heard up and down Santa Clara Street, and beautiful Latinos strut by on 16 in midnight blue Buick Rivieras with gold smokes and silver crucifixes hanging from the rearview mirror. Downtown when you're brown on a Friday night, all the signs say no cruising zone, but what they really mean is no. Santa Clara at a McDonald's parking lot, surrounded by four police cruisers, while two bigs in SWAT gear search your car illegally, and a third one frisks you. And now I'm not talking about no pussy little frisk like you see in front of a club. I'm talking about a real motherfucking frisk like they do on cops when they tell you to spread your legs, put your hands on the hood of the car, and they pat you down so good you think you're getting a hand job. And you know, if they don't find nothing on you, if they don't find nothing on you, oh shit, you look out downtown, but somewhere, someone's getting arrested for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting beat to a pulp by Billy Clubs in a back alley for being brown in downtown. Someone's getting shot for being brown in downtown. And everywhere, 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 that's us going down for being brown in downtown.
And good evening. I'm Robert Norris, and this, of course, again, is still, as it was 3 minutes ago, free radio. In case you want to call into this show, it's an easy number to remember, and I'll try to repeat it, 427-3772, in case you have confidential material or you're feeling a little awkward or you just want to talk off air. The number to call is 423-4833. That's the Huff Line, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which also actually will now go, when I'm around it, to a live phone. So you'll actually be able to curse me out in person if you'd like. Again, 423-HUFF if you want to contact me off air, 427-3772. If you have any comments about this show on air or some community bulletins you think perhaps that are relevant to what I'm talking about or perhaps should be talking about, if you have other community service information or you want more information about Free Radio Santa Cruz, or you want to make a donations of any kind, you can call the Free Radio voicemail line, which is 427-4523. Again, those three numbers. The voicemail line, in case you want info, want to become a member of the collective, want to give us something, need to know something from us. The number is 427-4523. The number for the on-air line, in case you want to be on the air, again, is 427-3772, 427-FRSC. And the number to call me off-air is 423-HUFF. I'll be trying to repeat at least one of those numbers again, in case you're confused. Pages in Color, which is the normal website we have here on this show, which was working for about 2 years, doesn't seem to be operating now. Maybe the computer problems in the studio have made it difficult to reboot, so I'm going to be working on that, hoping to get it together. But, hey. If you got some thoughts, please try to call in and let me know and let the community know. I'm going to be doing some updates of different kinds, playing some interviews, and as I said before, discussing Iraq, again, reading some articles on that and hoping for your thoughts on the issue as well. Of course, as always, my focus is what can we do locally to get off dead center. You know, I looked at the Good Times newspaper, which is not really more of a large advertising clump about getting rid of hair removal, and there is an article for Greenway, Compassionate Relief, I see here, but that's the marijuana club. Happy anniversary, it says. They just never call me back anyway, that Greenway club. I don't know why. Lisa used to be pretty good about that, but she hasn't called back the last three or four calls that I had. Maybe she's not available for some reason. Anyway, the calendar in the Good Times has a number of interesting items, which I wanted to pass on for those of you who are, well, wondering what to do with your Thursday evening. There's a writer's roundtable at the Santa Cruz Library. And actually, I'm sorry, that's the first Thursday of the month, so it'll be coming up in a week from 6 to 7:30. So a week from today, if you want to do some writing, check out the Central Library. I don't usually do this, but it seems to me these are possible opportunities. Or, hey, if you want to go flyer, go to these places if people are interested in the subjects at hand. Maybe you can pass on information that would be useful for broader causes like the rights of immigrants, anti-war activity, reform in Santa Cruz. There's even, of course, what we laughably call an election for the Santa Cruz City Council coming up. And, of course, we reviewed some of the candidates. I haven't heard back from the other four yet, Lynn Robinson, Chris Cobb, Cynthia Matthews, and Bruce Van Allen. When I do, they will, of course, be scheduled on the show, and you will be able to ask questions of them on the air, as you were able to ask questions of Mike Rotkin and Simba Kenyatta on Sunday. And if you want to go back to that show to hear what they had to say, you can by going to the Huff website, www.huffsantacruz.org, www.huffsantacruz.org. Check it out. You can also, there'll be community TV replays of at least one of the community forums. Unfortunately, to me, the less interesting one, the one that happened at the police community room run by the downtown neighbors about a week and a half ago. That, I understand, is going to be replayed on community TV. But the earlier one, the previous day, the SCAN, Green Party, People's Democratic Club, and however sick I am of those three organizations in many ways, nonetheless, those two of them anyway, SCAN and the Green Party, have gone on record as opposing the criminalization of homeless people in Santa Cruz, supporting their right to sleep somewhere legally at night, opposing laws that criminalize poor people downtown to some extent. I don't recall a specific recommendation on that particular point, but there have been concerns, at least by SCAN and Green Party members, around that issue. And that forum, unfortunately, I have not been able to find anybody who's recorded it. Community TV apparently didn't, or at least that's what they tell me when I call in. So there's no record other than people's memories who were there, maybe Louis LaFortune, who does a show on this station, and who also, I think, was one of the masters of ceremonies, if not the master of ceremonies, at the SCAN forum a week ago Monday, might be able to give information. It's not terribly, I think, vital to those of us who are concerned about civil rights for homeless people, rent control, community control of police, because none of these candidates are very good on these issues. They're all pretty horrible. And, you know, frankly, unless there's some kind of earthquake, and Simba Kenyatta thinks there may be, and I hope there is, but I don't think there will be, but who knows? It's going to be Cynthia Matthews and Mike Rotkin again recycling in. I would urge you to say no to these two. These are our current mayor, Cynthia Matthews, whom I've called at different times Two-Minute Matthews, because of her penchant for cutting back the public speaking time, particularly to those whose positions she doesn't agree with, if they are, for example, trying to assert the rights of workers, as Nora Hockman was at the Tuesday City Council meeting day before yesterday in the afternoon, when the issue of a study for the minimum wage initiative came up. And Matthews would not give her a five-minute presentation time to make her presentation, or a little extra time, even though she and the group she was representing were behind the initiative and had the city council doesn't mind dumping a lot of money into a big study of the issue, which is primarily a pro-business study. They didn't go into questions of how many jobs workers were doing and what they were generally paying for rent. There was some talk of their disposable income that would be increased, but it was mostly a boohoo session for the merchants and how they and their fears and their concerns and their apprehension. It's mentioned in the headlines of today's Sentinel, if you look at it, about the fears of the merchants. If you raise the minimum wage, you know, we'll have to leave town. We'll take our business somewhere else, that sort of thing. And I'm not saying that's not a consideration that should be looked at, but you know, if you are listening to this station and you want to support workers' rights, you should be quite aware, you probably are aware by this time, that Cynthia Matthews and Mike Rotkin are probably at the bottom of your list. So are most of the other council candidates, but those two for sure. And they're the most powerful members of the community with the most political pull running for city council. So think about that before you vote. Something else is happening tonight. Open to the public from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Central Library. Even as we speak on Church Street is a basic information on the record clearance process with volunteer attorneys providing individual advice on how to clean up your criminal records. So if you want to, straighten up your police records or your court records, this may be an opportunity for you to get some legal advice without paying through the nose for it. Again, that's at the Central Library on Church Street. It might be upstairs, might be downstairs. If you get there, they'll tell you where it is. It's right across from the Sentinel. That's at 224 Church, also across from the City Council and Kitty Corner from the Civic Auditorium. Records Clearance Clinic, it's called. And indeed, even as I speak, the City Council of Capitola is meeting. I don't have much to say about the Capitola City Council. I was in the City Council offices of Capitola, I think, just once. Never spent much time there in terms of being interested. Santa Cruz has always been my focus. It's a county seat. It's, I think, the cultural center of the county and the community. It's where most people are. It's the area that interests me the most. There is a campaign kickoff tomorrow for the Yes on I&J campaign. These are measures which prohibit university expansion unless they fully mitigate the impacts of growth. I think it's also a measure to add to the city's slush fund or its general fund. It's a tax increase, I believe. It's going to be at the Bookshop Santa Cruz. It's open to the public 5 to 7, assuming you're not Robert Norris. I've been banned from the Bookshop Santa Cruz, so I will not be able to go in there unless I get a get-out-of-jail-free card from Neil or Ryan Coonerty. We'll see if those folks offer that. I don't see that necessarily happening. Not that I would spend a lot of time there. But it's something you might be interested in if you want to get the dope on measures that the Santa Cruz City Council has not only endorsed, but is spending some money supporting in terms of some literature. Not a lot of money, but some money. And it's interesting. They don't mind endorsing those, but they're keeping really clear the minimum wage proposal or the lowest priority for marijuana prosecutions initiative. Both of those are, not only would the city council, did they refuse to pass them as laws, which they could have done by a 4-3 vote, saving everybody a lot of time and trouble, but they also refused to endorse them once they reached where they were forced to put them on the ballot because people went around and got 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 signatures for each one of them. And, of course, that's not surprising, considering Cynthia Matthews is the mayor and Mike Rotkin is the shadow mayor of the Santa Cruz City Council. And these are folks who, while Rotkin does not, I think, oppose the marijuana initiative, he has, for example, as I've pointed out on the station repeatedly, been instrumental in blocking, or let's put it this way, he's failed to carry through on his promises to change city law so that medical marijuana dispensaries can be opened. Well, the places, for example, they were open before, like Maple Street, which had an illegal but tolerated clinic for 5 or 6 or 7 years, and between 1992 or 3 and almost 1998, something like that. And or out on Soquel Avenue, where one opened in 2000 and promptly had to close again because of the law that was written by Mike Rotkin and the city council during those days. He has repeatedly said he would move to reexamine and modify and correct this law and has done absolutely nothing about it. At least if he has done something about it, we haven't heard about it. I haven't heard about it. And if you've heard about it, please call in 427-3772. So Rotkin is, he doesn't mind passing an Office of Compassionate Use in Santa Cruz that is completely empty, won't open up until the Supreme Court gives it the okay. And he doesn't mind jumping on the Wham lawsuit at the same time as he is silent on the latest prosecution of Roger Minch, the Felton Emporium medical marijuana distributor, who is again being hauled before the courts, and I mean the federal court, I mean our local Bob Lee, district attorney, by Sheriff Robbins, our own lovable sheriff that we hear so many fine words about from Anita Henry and other medical marijuana activists who, can't get enough love for and from the sheriffs. But these are the clowns that are going after people selling medical marijuana in the county to people with medical marijuana cards. We shouldn't have to go through this rigmarole of medical marijuana cards. It's all a bunch of crap, as we know. But even when you do, even when you spend, you know, hundreds, thousands of hours getting laws passed and challenging things in court, you find the same clowns with badges and guns and business suits moving in to direct the situation, criminalize people, and fill the jails with people who are guilty of no crimes other than deciding they want to use a particular herb or a particular drug. I'll expand this to hard drugs for all of you who have any doubt about my position. Hard drugs are a medical problem. They're not a criminal problem. Any civilized person, I believe, knows that. I guess you might say there are civilized people who have a different opinion. Yes, that's true. I believe, however, it's pretty elementary. And I think people who oppose that are either ignorant, prejudiced, or have some special interest involved, or they're on a wavelength I don't understand. And maybe if you have any other thoughts on this locally, feel free to call in 427-3772. Also on Saturday, we were talking about Friday, and now there's this campaign kickoff at with Measures I and J happening at the Bookshop Santa Cruz between 6 and 8. There may be some, actually between 5 and 7, sorry. Bookshop Santa Cruz is the large bookstore, which in many respects, is much more progressive in some of its attitudes than other, I don't want to say bookstores, even than Borders. Santa Cruz Bookstore has a bathroom that's open to the community, for instance, or at least I think it's open. As I said, I haven't been allowed in there since 1994. But, and occasionally you'll get a homeless person sleeping in the doorway of the Bookshop Santa Cruz. And I think that's also commendable. I know people who've regularly been allowed to do that, even though it's a violation of the Santa Cruz sleeping ban and the police could arrest them anyway, but the bookshop at least didn't make complaints at that time. So my commendations to the manager of the Bookshop Santa Cruz for that, but for its ban on activists, I'm not the only activist who's been banned, not good. And of course, the management of the Bookshop Santa Cruz includes some of the phoniest progressives in town, Neil Coonerty, now our supervisor, and Ryan Coonerty, who's city council member. Both of these great champions of civil liberties believe in such things as criminalizing a person for sitting in their car for more than 15 minutes in a parking garage in Santa Cruz, or even walking into one to get out of the rain if they're poor and don't have a vehicle or bicycle there, even if they're not poor, for that matter. Now, these are people who pushed for the downtown ordinances that criminalize most political tabling downtown, criminalize most peaceful panhandling, and criminalize most sitting. And you might say, well, that, I see panhandlers downtown and so forth. You do, but that's because the police on some occasions selectively enforce the laws. And it's also because people are so needy, they do it anyway. So the fact of the matter is we have a gentrification, criminalization scene that's happening here that the only city council candidate who's saying anything about it is Simba Kenyatta, to his credit. And I think that was covered in the last Good Times. Again, other stuff around in the Good Times that's of interest in the calendar. To me, of interest, 7:30 to 10 on Friday night, Democracy and Bolivian Revolution in Venezuela. Unitarian Universalist Fellowship featuring Speaker Bill Monning. You may remember old Bill. I think he was running for... Was it Farr's seat? It was something, the McPherson seat. He was running for a local office, and I think he barely was defeated. Very outspoken on progressive issues. 7:30 to 10, and it's out in Aptos. Again, that's Friday night, tomorrow night, 6401 Freedom Boulevard. All this is in the Good Times, so I'm really probably not telling you anything that you couldn't otherwise find out by just walking into your local bookstore or your local neighborhood laundromat. Saturday, there's going to be a mime troupe presentation of Godfellows. That's the mime troupe at 2:30 in the afternoon in San Lorenzo Park. I'm not sure if they're going to be using the Duck Pond stage, or they'll probably be using the field underneath the bridge, which is what they usually do. But that's going to be happening tomorrow. It's free Saturday and Sunday. Mime troupe is often a lot of fun, and I think it's one of their last shows of the season. Unfortunately, I think it also... let me take a look here. It also conflicts with an interesting sounding forum, or actually, I guess it's a seminar. How would we describe it? Know Your Rights and Surviving Police Encounters, which runs from 1 to 4 o'clock on Saturday afternoon, September 30th, at Loudon Nelson Community Park. It's being run by the Free School, which I was a proud participant in this summer. Hats off to all you free schoolers, both teachers and students. And, you know, it's great. And the key motto is going to be, I'm going to remain silent and I want to speak with a lawyer. And as the legal crackdown or the police crackdown gets more intense, as it may, if you look at the Senate, at the House, has just passed a law which for the first time strips us of habeas corpus, which is the right to be taken before a judge if you're accused of a crime. Now, they'll tell you, well, that's only if you're declared an unlawful combatant by the president. And, you know, you have to be an Arab speaker for that to happen, right? So for all of us non-Arab speakers, we're all fine. Think again, you know, individuals who provide material assistance to any group. If you donate money to a charity that's connected with something that the State Department decides is a terrorist group, you may disappear if this bill passes the Senate, as is expected, because the Democrats, as usual, have tucked their tails between their legs and are running scared, thinking that if only we can win the election, well, then we'll restore habeas corpus. This is completely absurd and, of course, the wrong way to go. And also, it's not going to happen because Bush is the president. If this bill passes, he can veto bills to change it. I'm not entirely clear on how – I know how courts have how the legislature, the Congress, has tried to strip habeas corpus – or let's put it this way, strip basic rights from the country before that seem to be entrenched in the Constitution. I mean, you know, the writ of habeas corpus is not only entrenched in the Constitution, it dates all the way back to the Magna Carta document that was in the 13th century that the nobles pried from King John back in merry old England. But the fact of the matter is, the way it's done in the United States in the past has been what Congress does is it removes court jurisdiction from certain kinds of cases. So if it says the courts have no jurisdiction, the Constitution may say you have a right, but the courts can't enforce it because they are not allowed the jurisdiction in those cases. I'm not entirely clear how it's been done. I'm going to read you a few articles on the subject, so we're going to be talking about that too. Again, Mime Troop on Saturday, also a conflict, but if you want to go, I guess you can go to the Mime Troop on Sunday in San Lorenzo Park and then check out the Loudon Nelson Park Free Schools Know Your Rights and Surviving Police Encounters workshop, if you want to check that out. Also, on Friday evening, I forgot to mention, Students Against War is having its maiden voyage for the fall. Students Against War was quite effective, as you may remember, in getting recruiters off campus or in publicizing the fact that they're quite unwelcome on campus up at UCSC. And they're meeting at 5 to 7 tomorrow at the Bay Tree Conference Center at UCSC. I think that's the large building that's across the way. It's either across the way from the bookstore. It is the bookstore. But if you get onto if you go to the sort of quadrangle area, you can find it. It's the Bay Tree Conference Center. And I'm curious to know what happens. I don't think I'm going to be up there, but I'd love to hear what's going on. I'd love to see Students Against War actually get involved down in Santa Cruz in some actions. And I was able to get to the die-in that happened as part of the Declaration of Peace event sequence that happened over the last week. And I did a little recording there. I'm going to play some of that. I think I'm going to play some of that now, even, by Cracky. And we'll begin with that, and maybe we'll get a rush of phone calls, and you can spare us all from hearing old tapes. Actually, it's not that old, a couple days old. But anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio, freakradio.org, 101.1 FM is where we're broadcasting. Phone number here is 831-427-3772. I'm Robert. Call in if you'd like.
So it's about 15 to 1 on September 25th, 2006. I'm here at the post office area across from the town clock where there's a die-in happening as a protest against the Iraqi war. It's like about 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 55 people maybe. All right, what's your name, sir?
Tom.
And you have a peace button on there.
Yes, I do.
How long have you been at this protest?
Oh, I've just arrived a few minutes ago. I didn't even know I was here today.
It was, I guess, on IndyBay.org, but not terribly widely publicized. Maybe in the Sentinel, I'm not sure. I see people are holding hands around this big circle that's on the sidewalk. Many signs, or a number of signs, 2,701 soldiers dead, worldwide prayer vigil for peace. There's a guy with an American flag on his shoulder. It looks like Bob Finch, perhaps. I'm not sure. And it looks like equal number of men and women are mostly, well, probably more women than men, but young people, older people, maybe even the occasional teenager. Any comments?
It's really good to see people out here. It's a reminder, and it's for me, it's a reminder that I need to do a little bit more. I have representatives in Washington, D.C. And in Sacramento, and they need to hear my opinions because I don't see a withdrawal coming, and that's what I really want. What I see is more troops and people in Washington committed to staying in Iraq, and I want all of the U.S. troops out as soon as possible. So this is a good reminder for me, and it's really good to see.
And we've been talking with
Tom Fordham.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
And cars are stopping occasionally as express solidarity. The Sherry Connable standing over by the median between Front Street and Pacific Avenue here with a sign. A number of people are sitting with signs, and there were a couple of folks who were dying in. She's with Celia Scott, actually. Hi. And bring them home now is what the sign says, what the people say. 2,642 soldiers dead in Iraq. Why? Says the sign across the street on the town clock. And illegally posted here is 12 noon, dying against the war. Join us, declarationofpeace.org. I will not stand idly by when I see an unjust war taking place. Martin Luther King sign. And this is one of a series of peace protests that's been happening in the last week. The Declaration of Peace, I believe, is the blanket term being used in an occasional honk in solidarity.
I'd like to thank you all for being here and invite you to join together here by the lamppost. If you would like to continue this process moving towards the county building, the symbol of our federal government, today at the county building and other locations, please join us as we raise our voices to end the illegal and ineffective occupation and war in Iraq. We stand here to honor the hundreds of thousands of human beings who have been killed in this fight, and to ask that there be no more killing in our name. Thank you all for being here.
And there's a sign, www.declarationofpeace.org. Petition Congress, bring U.S. troops home from Iraq. And we have a harpist here. Are you a harpist for peace?
Yep.
And what kind of, can you give us like an example of your harping here? I guess you're harping on the issue.
This is in memory of the troops who've died in Iraq.
Thank you. And you are?
Kathleen.
Thanks, Kathleen. So what's going on here, folks? Tell the uneducated what's happening.
We are just arisen from the dead.
We have arisen from the dead.
Again. Indeed, I see some
only
white
to die again.
Some white chalked body figure on the sidewalk. You realize chalking on the sidewalk is illegal in Santa Cruz, of course.
We're considering cleaning it up, although it's sort of.
Don't you want to wait until the Iraq
the military in Iraq cleans up its own mess?
I don't feel like cleaning it up. I think as the more people who remember that death is real in this endeavor, the better.
Your name is?
Happy, and I greet Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom.
I'm glad Kathy does. You're listening to tape from the die-in, where a bunch of people sort of lay on the ground in deathish positions at the foot of the mall, or is it the head of the mall, near the town clock. It's interesting. I didn't see any police around there, but I remember that, for example, 4 years ago in 2002 and 3 years ago in 2003, homeless activists were arrested for chalking on the sidewalk directions on how to get to a meeting around the corner where the Grand High Council members Emily Riley and Ed Porter were holding one of their zip through the anti-homeless laws, the anti-homeless downtown ordinance forums. Ironically, that forum ended up being the highest priority at the forum was to eliminate police misconduct. So, of course, instead they gave the police a broader blank check. But people were arrested around that time, ticketed and arrested. Becky Johnson was ticketed and arrested for chalking on the sidewalk, simple statements about the sleeping ban. Whereas here, the politically correct anti-war protesters don't get any kind of mistreatment at all from the police in this regard, and nor should they, because chalking on the sidewalk in erasable chalk is clearly First Amendment free speech protected. First Amendment protected free speech. There we go. And the idea that we in Santa Cruz are now regressing to the point that the business community is able to dictate when we shall have free speech and when we shall not is truly outrageous. And it's unfortunately a reality, an increasingly grim reality every day. Rather than play more of the die-in, which I may do in a bit, I'm going to play you something that I recorded on Tuesday. I was actually in the Public Works Department, or perhaps I should call them the Public Jerks Department, friendly as these folks are. And Matt Farrell is a nice guy. I like him personally as an individual. He swapped stories about his trips to South America with me. If I knew him under other circumstances, it would be, I think, considerably different. But he's also the man who pushes and fronts for merchant interests in terms of an employee interest, where employees are looking for very, very sweeping powers and cutting back public spaces in order to, quote, protect them from the unsightly homeless. This is, of course, I'm referring to the parking garage paranoia law, which originally was what I called the parking lot panic law, the law that was passed in July with two dissenting votes, Porter and Fitzmaurice, which makes it illegal to enter a parking garage, any of those city parking garages, unless you have a bike or a vehicle there. And in order to clear up any confusion, for example, suppose you entered the Locust Street garage in order to use their public restroom, their plans are, well, you'll hear about it. Matt Farrell is going to talk about how the plans are to shut down that restroom and turn it over to the employees, to customers, and to people who are actually paid users or parkers in the garage rather than your average person who's, you know, walking around trying to find some place to avoid voiding on the streets, which, of course, is impossible after 10 o'clock in the evening now that the city has eliminated the last porta-potty downtown that was open to the public, the one in parking lot number 4 near the farmer's market, in terms of its being a 24-hour porta-potty. Under Parks and Rec pressure, we're going to hear from Matt Farrell. Let's hear Matt Farrell address some of these issues, and perhaps you will, too. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norris, and maybe we'll find out who you are.
Matt Farrell at the Public Works Department. It's September 26th, and we're discussing a possibility of self-cleaning toilets, as they have in Seattle and San Francisco. Go ahead, Matt.
Well, we just talked to agencies in Seattle, Atlanta, Washington, D.C. A while back, I had conversations with people in San Jose and people in Palo Alto.
They have them up there now?
all three of those agencies have the French toilets, the Deco self-cleaning toilets. The company, we're looking at two companies right now, a company called Exalu, which is out of New Zealand, and a company called Herring Bau, which is a German company, and they currently supply their five toilets in the city of Seattle that are available to the public, and they're maintained by a contractor called Northwest Cascade.
And both of these companies are up in Seattle, or just one of them?
Well, Herring Bau's in Germany. Northwest Cascade is the company that has the arrangement with the city of Seattle to maintain the public toilets there.
And these are different than the, what, 15 or so that are in San Francisco that are paid for with the advertising that's on the kiosk?
There are two companies called Wall out of Boston, and then Deco, which is a French company, but they have offices in San Francisco and Los Angeles. Those are companies that basically use these public facilities as street furniture to do advertising. And like in San Francisco, I think Deco also has, or used to have at least, the franchise for all the advertising on the bus stops as well as the restroom. So it becomes kind of a
self-generating revenue,
a package deal where they supply the public restrooms as part of having all that advertising.
Not what they do in Seattle, right?
Seattle has a city policy that says you can't, they don't want to advertise on the public restrooms. So Seattle went a different route. They went with Herring Bau because they wanted a vendor.
Different kind of toilet than the Dakota?
Similar technology.
Very similar. It works. Explain how this toilet works for the person who's never used it. I've been to them, but I've never been in them up in San Francisco.
What happens is, you know, you push the button, you go into the restroom.
What's inside? A toilet, a urinal?
Toilet and a sink. You can't have a urinal in them, but the units we're looking at simply have
a bidet, possibly a jacuzzi.
No. They have a toilet and a sink, and then a hand dryer or paper towel dispenser or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the person sits down, uses the toilet. There's a programmed amount of time that the unit's available to the customer.
Is there a hook that kind of throws you out?
No. What happens in Seattle is they have 15 minutes, I think, programmed into the use of the restroom. And a couple minutes before the doors would open, it gives you a warning that the facility's going to open. And then, you know, you have time to get
pull up your pants fast
and get ready to leave. Then what happens is after that person leaves, the door shuts and the toilet seat is retracted and cleaned, mm-hmm. and then put back out again.
So it's the toilet seat that's cleaned, not, let's say, the floor.
The whole unit gets cleaned also.
Oh, really?
And it gets cleaned. You program how often it gets cleaned based on the number of uses.
And what do you estimate is the cost? I'm sure you have an idea of the approximate cost of one of these toilets for Santa Cruz. You're thinking of one or more than one?
Right now we're looking at one facility.
At near the, where the Sichuan restaurant is, on the corner of China Sichuan.
Location, people are still looking at a number of locations for this facility.
Replacing the one that's in the public garage there, turning that over as a, to make a kind of a customer restroom for the China Sichuan?
Well, for a number of tenants in the building, you know, there's
Little Shanghai, I mean, not China Sichuan, excuse me.
Yeah, there's Little Shanghai, Cafe Limelight, Eco Design.
But scraggly homeless people would no longer be welcome in that bathroom.
Well, there's a problem of trying to meet both facility needs in one common restroom. And so we looked at the option of converting the Locust Garage into a combination of public, some units being public and some being reserved for the tenants.
Sure. The whites and then the blacks, so kind of this different separation. So that the messier people could use one, and the more fastidious could.
Well, the problem we have is vandalism in the public restrooms, and it becomes a problem for a business who is a tenant in a building to have to deal with that kind of problem. So, in the SoCal garage, we have two separate facilities because we understood that we needed to do that was something we'd learned from doing the Locust Garage. So we do have public restrooms there and restrooms for the tenants and the staff of the building in a separate location.
So we were trying to look at doing a combined, you know, modification of that restroom at the Locust Garage, and it got to be a pretty expensive proposition, around $250,000 to $280,000.
Whereas the cost of a Decote would be something like...
Well, the cost of a
Decote-style bathroom.
An automated public toilet would probably be in the neighborhood of $220,000 to $270,000.
About the same cost?
About the same cost. The problem is if we go in and modify the Locust Garage restroom, we then are removing a public facility from the... Well, two things. We no longer have a restroom available to the tenants in the building if we do that. And we have no restroom available to the public while we do that modification. And that became kind of an operational issue, is how are we going to accommodate all these folks while we demolish the existing restroom and then put in these two kind of separate facilities.
I think this is an interesting subject. My problem is I have a council meeting, probably so do you, to get to it. They'll probably be needing you on some of these items. But let me ask you very quickly. Signs are due around the what I call the parking garage paranoia law, the 15 minutes and get out if you have a car. Don't go in at all if you don't. Those signs for designating free speech zones or whatever they're going to be will be put in October.
The signs that talk about the 15-minute rule for the parking lots will be installed. We're hoping for like mid-October.
And that includes specifications to where you can give out a flyer and things like that.
It wouldn't have designated free speech zones because we haven't really received requests for designating those areas.
Consider this a request.
Well,
I can make it in writing if you'd like.
That would probably be a good idea.
Okay.
So, in other words, even though it was requested by the city council, it's a part of the law that they passed, and it was a serious concern of the American Civil Liberties Union. Matt Farrell is now telling us that they haven't received any subsequent requests, so they're not even designating so-called free speech areas in the parking garage. Now, if there are no such designated areas, it seems to me that it's appropriate to enter the garage and do it where you need to do it, where free speech can mean singing an anti-war song, perhaps, with a guitar, standing and giving out leaflets to people who are in the vehicles or coming out of vehicles who want them, who might want them. I guess I raised the issue of leafleting on cars to Ryan Coonerty, and he suggested that he's our council member, something like that would be illegal. That would not be appropriate to flyer cars. That would be littering, perhaps. I think Rotkin said the same thing. And Coonerty also said he had no interest in this particular... He seemed to have no interest in this particular issue. Let's hear some more of Matt Farrell, although there's not much more of this because we both rushed off to the Tuesday city councilman here. I did, anyway.
One last question. The porta potty in parking lot number, what is it, 4, has disappeared, and I take it, it looks like it's gone forever. Is that the intention of Public Works or whoever's handling this?
Well, right now, that's the porta potty was removed there because we were having a lot of problems with it leaking and other issues in terms of problems with waste and materials that were put inside the toilet then being left outside the toilet. And so
all toilet paper and things like that?
Right? Well, clothes and stuff like that.
Okay.
And so we talked with Parks and Recreation. They asked that it be removed. And we talked with the Farmers Market manager. And what the market has agreed to do is to provide the toilet during the days when the market is there and then have it removed.
Which is pretty bizarre, considering these porta potties were put in not, I don't know, for the exchange of clothing or to suit the Parks and Rec Department. We're not talking about the Parks and Recreation Commission, which has had less and less power and is the only semi-public group involved, but Danette Shoemaker's Parks and Recreation employees and bosses who run the show, along with Matt Farrell in the Public Works Department here. So the idea, the needs that had five porta potties set in downtown, supposedly temporarily awaiting 24-hour bathrooms, which have never been constructed or never been opened. I mean, presumably there are 24-hour bathrooms and plenty of office buildings that the city could simply fund and open if they wanted to, as, for example, was done in Santa Barbara, not on a 24-hour basis, but on a part-time basis during the day, or at least during the daytime hours in the early 90s. The city has no interest in meeting the needs of people who are poor in Santa Cruz. They figure, go take a piss on the sidewalk and our police will round you up and drive you out of town. If they're concerned, the apprehension, maybe even paranoia, you would say, since I think unjustified concern, that this will only draw more people who are just not the ideal customers. Ideal customers, have their own colostomy bags and their own catheters with them. What I mean to say, of course, is they have their own checkbooks and their own credit cards with them, and they can use the bathrooms that are in the businesses. Although when people come pouring out of the bars at 2 in the morning and there are no porta potties or bathrooms, they piss on the streets. And it's regrettable that the staff and the city council have decided to overrule, without any kind of official action or discussion, the determinations made in 1999 that there should be public bathrooms. I mean, this is something people have been talking about for years, decades even, and that finally began to move incrementally forward into the Crone, Sugar, Fitzmaurice Council. But now it's obviously we're rolling back the clock, just like, we're rolling back to a permanent war economy, permanent terrorism economy. In Santa Cruz, we have this permanent police state notion, permanent class-dominated society notion that you don't provide the less services for poor people, the better, at least as far as the poorest of the poor goes. And even the general public, bathrooms are kind of a no-brainer. Anyway, you're tuned to Free Radio. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathurst Pierre's Broadsides at 101.1 FM. Let's take a brief musical break.
Many's the hour I've lain by my window and thought of the people who've carried the burdens, who marched into strange fields in search of an answer and ended their journeys an unwilling hero. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. Back in the coal field of old Harlan County, some talked of a union, some talked of good wages, and they lined them up in the dark of the forest and shot them down without asking no questions. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. And over the ocean to the red Spanish soil came the Lincoln Brigade with their dreams of a victory, but they fell in the fire of Germany's bombing, and they fell 'cause nobody would hear their sad warning. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. In old Alabama, in old Mississippi, two states of the Union so often found guilty, they came on the buses, they came on the marches, and they lay in the jails, or they fell by the highway. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. This state it was Texas, the town it was Dallas. In the flash of a rifle, a life was soon over, and nobody thought of the past million murders. And the long list of irony had found a new champion. So here's a song to those who are gone, with never a reason why, and a toast of the one at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. Sit by my side, come as close as the air, share in a memory of gray, and wander in my words, dream about the pictures that I play of changes. Green leaves of summer turn red in the fall, to brown and to yellow they fade, and then they have to die, trapped within the circle time parade of changes. Scenes of my young years were warm in my mind, visions of shadows that shine, till one day I returned and found they were the victims of the vines of changes. The world spinning madly, it drifts in the dark, swings through a hollow of haze, a race around the stars, a journey through the universe ablaze with changes.
That's Phil Oakes' Changes, and also earlier, A Toast to Those Who Are Gone, from his Farewells and Fantasies albums, or CDs, collection. Well, I'm tempted to finish off the Matt Farrell's commentary. He's our public works director on, actually his double talk, on why we, what his department is doing around cutting back basic civilized public sanitation in Santa Cruz in what is clearly a class-based attack designed to please certain sectors of the community that already have more than enough bathrooms but want to deny those who need them the right to take a dump, and then, of course, blame them for pissing on the, and prosecute them for pissing and crapping where they have to, just as it is with the sleeping ban. Basic human functions require certain basic facilities, and to cut back on those facilities with the idea that you're kind of dealing with other problems is disingenuous. You have to deal with the basic problems, and the other problems that come up should have to be dealt with too, but to use those as a pretext for doing it is ridiculous. Here's the rest of the Farrell interview.
And what the market has agreed to do is to provide the toilet during the days when the market is there and then have it removed. So that's what's happening with the porta potty at the farmer's market.
Of the five porta potties put in after the Crone Crapper Commission did its work, the task force on bathrooms that you were, I think, probably involved with as staff, how many of those still remain in Santa Cruz? Any?
In terms of downtown, we don't have any of those porta potties left anymore.
And what new bathrooms have been put in since that time to take up the slack for people who need to use the bathroom?
Well, since we started that work, was done, I think, right around the time we were building the Locust Garage. So I don't think that we had the public restroom at the Locust Garage.
Closed at 10, right?
11 o'clock. And then we also didn't have the garage room, the garage at the SoCal Front restroom.
Closed at 10, I believe.
I think the times vary based on what our staffing levels are. So
that's what I remember from the sign on the door. But also, of course, there's no 24-hour bathrooms now, such as these porta potties in essence were.
Yes, there aren't any 24-hour bathrooms downtown. Or porta potties downtown.
Thank you for your candor, and we will try to avoid leaving fecal material near the Public Works Department at this time.
That would be thoughtful.
Yes. Thank you. Matt Farrell.
There's enough shit there as it is. Anyway, this is Free Radio. 427-3772 is the call-in number here. Now looking at the, what is it? It's the New York Times website. Here's a story on the death of the Constitution in the Senate and the House. This actually is dated yesterday. Congress took major steps on Wednesday toward establishing a new system for interrogating and trying terror suspects as the House approved legislation sought by President Bush and the Senate defeated efforts to alter the measure. Before we even begin to look at it, you have to say they've been holding these folks for 5 years. If they wanted to try them at any time during that period of time, they could. But they obviously did not feel they wanted to do that. They wanted to just hold them indefinitely. And to our shame, every one of us, instead of breaking windows and raising the roof that the Constitution was being torn up, we went about our daily whatever we were doing. And it's not that I'm counseling violence, but unless there is a response from the community of outrage one way or another, this creep, this fascist creep by fascist creeps, continues. And you see it happening in the House and the Senate again as I read you this legislation. The House, in a politically charged decision, voted 253 to 168 in favor of extensive new rules governing the questioning of terror suspects and bringing them before military tribunals. The Senate was expected to follow suit on Thursday, which would deliver Republicans a major national security victory before the elections. I don't know who's writing these New York Times stories. Some friend of the Reich Chancellor, perhaps, who took a time machine from 1934. The time to act is now, said Senator Bill Frist, the majority leader, as he opened the Senate debate after reaching a deal with the Democrats. Those are going to be our saviors in the 2006 elections, right? Who agreed not to stand in the way of a final vote on the bill in exchange for consideration of amendments. In the House, in other words, they could have filibustered. They could have said, you're not going to pass this bill. You want to go home for the elections. We're not going to let you. They could have stopped this constitutional devastation that has now happened. But they chose not to because they don't want to be weak on national security. The time to act is now, said Bill Frist. In the House, 219 Republicans and 34 Democrats, many in more competitive districts, supported the bill. 160 Democrats and 7 Republicans opposed it. The opponents included the Democratic leadership and major party voices on the military and intelligence issues. Republicans immediately sought to portray the vote as a defining one between the two parties. It is outrageous that House Democrats, at the urging of their leaders, continue to oppose giving President Bush the tools he needs to protect our country, said Representative John A. Bonner of Ohio, the majority leader. But Democrats said the legislation would reverse fundamental American values by allowing seizure of evidence in this country without a search warrant, allowing evidence obtained through cruel and inhuman treatment, and denying relief or appeal to people like Maher Arar, whom the United States sent to Syria for interrogation that included torture, even after the Canadian government told American officials he was not a terrorist. This is un-American. This is unconstitutional. This is contrary to American interests. This is not what a great and good and powerful nation should be doing, said Senator Patrick J. Leahy, Democrat of Vermont. Backers of the measure said the legislation, which was sought by Mr. Bush after the Supreme Court in June, struck down the administration's system for trying detainees, none of whom have been tried. So it wasn't really a system. It was a system for holding detainees for trial. Would guarantee terror suspects adequate rights while not hindering interrogations. They have this nice language here. We are dealing with the enemy in war, not defendants in our criminal justice system, said Representative Duncan Hunter, Republican of California and chairman of the Armed Services Committee. In time of war, it is not practical to apply the same rules of evidence that we apply in civil trials or courts martial for our troops. In other words, we're in a permanent war. And we permanently have lost the writ of habeas corpus. We have lost the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment. We have lost the right to be free from searches without a warrant. Leading Democrats have said the approach would result in government-sanctioned mistreatment of detainees. They predicted it would again be thrown out by the Supreme Court, leaving the United States remaining without a system to try terrorists after a wait that has already extended 5 years beyond September 11, 2001. And while we're waiting for Bush's Supreme Court to decide if it's going to support Bush, there won't be any rights for folks, and the authorities will be free to continue arresting people without warrants, detaining them indefinitely if they're declared unlawful combatants, using evidence obtained under torture. It's frightening. If you want to be tough on terrorists, let's not pass something that rushes to judgment and has legal loopholes that will reverse a conviction, said Representative Ike Skelton of Missouri, senior Democrat on the Armed Services Committee. Fellow Democrats said the measure could be interpreted by other nations as reducing America's commitment to the rights of prisoners of war. When our moral standing is eroded, our international credibility is diminished as well, said Representative Steny H. Hoyer of Maryland, the number two Democrat in the House. It's important to understand here, we have seen in the recent days reports that this guy, the Canadian Maher Arar, was kidnapped to Syria by the so-called extraordinary rendition procedures, presumably the CIA, U.S. was involved in it, U.S. government, handed over to the Syrians and tortured for a year. And instead of a complete house cleaning of these killers and torturers and murderers and people who are routinely funneling people off to these black holes, instead of that, instead of the wave of outrage we need from this community, what we're getting is the Democrats and the Republicans talking about essentially putting in place much the same system as before. I mean, to me, it's all in the wrong direction. And it's hard to assess. It's becoming increasingly clear that for some reason, there's just, maybe it's because there's an institutional inertia or that's been set in motion, like a juggernaut has been set in motion, because the power is so skewed now that there's no going back. Other countries, like Mexico, can send millions, hundreds of thousands of people go to the Zocalo Plaza in Mexico City and stand up. We have, you know, revolutionary, huge numbers of people show up in former Eastern European countries, some of which will overturn the government. In Hungary, even, tens of thousands of people are showing up opposing a government. I may not even agree with the ideology of the people who are doing this, but the people stand up and they speak out. We have, you know, we have courageous people who are coming out occasionally. We have a guy walking across Utah, I guess just got back from Iraq, is a soldier, and he's going to walk across the most conservative state. We have people, you know, turning themselves in for courts martial. We have Cindy Sheehan and others, you know, who are willing to sit outside Bush's summer quarters and, you know, raise the roof there. But it's also limited. It's also inadequate. And in Santa Cruz, we have polite, limited, well-monitored, small protests that arrive and then go home. We don't have people occupying the offices of Representative Farr and demanding that he stop voting for the broad military appropriations that he routinely votes for, though he does vote against the special appropriation for Iraq. We don't have people occupying the Capitola offices of the, or blocking the offices of the military recruiters, although they did show up there. Some folks did show up there a few days ago and had some dialogue with the people there, and that's nice. It's just, it's not enough, folks. It's not stopping it. It's rolling over us. Continuing with the story about the passage of the historic destruction of the writ of habeas corpus in the United States of America on September 28, 2006. Senator Carl Levin of Michigan, the senior Democrat on the Armed Services Committee, characterized the bill as the product of an administration that has been relentless in its determination to legitimize the abuses of detainees. Of course, he doesn't mention this great Democrat that he's not going to stand up and try to filibuster it, which he could do. He could do it on his own. He could filibuster this bill and stop it from passing, but he wants to make sure that perhaps the Democrats get more people elected in the election, you see. Even though that won't restore the writ of habeas corpus, because Bush will still be the president. This is a key vote. He's going to wait for Bush's Supreme Court to maybe throw this out. Maybe. The House debate was interrupted repeatedly by protesters in the gallery who were removed by security workers. The bill was a compromise worked out between the White House and three Senate Republicans who for weeks had resisted the administration's approach. They contended the White House's initial bill would violate the Constitution and redefine the nation's obligations under the Geneva Conventions, signaling to other nations that they too could rewrite the rules on dealing with combatants seized in wartime, which is, of course, exactly what it does. The intra-party rift had threatened to derail Republican hopes to champion theirs as the party of national security. And this whole national security issue, it's sort of disgusting that the New York Times plays it up so much instead of simply focusing on the administration's policy of what terrorism suspects have been convicted of what in the last 5 years. What's the real record here? What's really going on? Instead of, you know, who can play politics the best with this completely spurious national security issue. There is a national security issue. It has to do with people in the government destroying the Constitution. And not to mention rousing the rest of the world against us through foreign occupation. Democrats have stayed mainly on the sidelines. I'm skipping a bit of the story because I've read it before, and most of you who listen to this broadcast and follow this issue probably have too. House Democrats were prevented from offering any amendments under the Senate agreement. Democrats were allowed 4 proposed amendments. Makes no difference because they knew all of them were going to be defeated. One by Mr. Levin would have adopted the approach endorsed by the Armed Services Committee and 3 Republicans who resisted the Bush administration. It failed on a 54-43 vote. With 2 Democrats, Landrieu of Louisiana and Nelson of Nebraska, crossing party lines to vote with the Bushocrats. Senator Arlen Specter of Pennsylvania and chairman of the Judiciary Committee pressed another amendment that would strike a provision that prohibits terror suspects from challenging their detention in the courts. In other words, he lost, and if you're a terror suspect, you can't go to the courts anymore. This should be chilling you, folks. It chills me. Concerned the legislation was being rushed through before an election without most senators understanding what was in the final version. Does this sound familiar? Can you say Patriot Act? Democratic Senator Robert C. Byrd of Virginia and Barack Obama of Illinois planned to offer a sunset provision that would require Congress to review the military commissions as the trials are known in 5 years. These are the great liberals. They're going to remove the Constitution for 5 years, after which time we'll look at it again. It's hard to believe. While Republicans were nearing success on a key element of the agenda with their terrorism bill, disputes among top Republicans were threatening other measures they hoped to pass, particularly a domestic security spending bill, a Pentagon policy bill, and so forth. The bad news today, however, is this headline. Senate passes detainee bill sought by Bush. Washington, AP. The Senate on Thursday endorsed President Bush's plans to prosecute and interrogate, torture, terror suspects, all but sealing congressional approval for legislation that Republicans intend to use on the campaign trail to assert their toughness on terrorism. Imagine if you read this story in a German newspaper in 1933 with the slant that the Nazis are going to use it to show how tough they are on the communists. You would find yourself wondering why the paper was focusing on that issue rather than on more fundamental issues. I guess there's no need to wonder. This is the New York Times. The 65-34 vote means the bill could reach the president's desk by week's end. The House passed nearly identical legislation on Wednesday and was expected to approve the Senate bill on Friday, sending it on to the White House. The bill would create military commissions to prosecute terrorism suspects. It also would prohibit blatant abuses of detainees, but grant the president flexibility to decide what interrogation techniques are legally permissible. Grant the president the flexibility to decide what interrogation techniques are legally permissible. The White House and its supporters have called the measure crucial in the anti-terror fight, but some Democrats and said left the door open to abuse. Can you imagine? Violating the U.S. Constitution in the name of protecting Americans. Senator Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, who helped draft the legislation during negotiations with the White House, said the measure would set up a system for treating detainees that the nation would be proud of. He said the goal is to render justice to the terrorists, even though they will not render justice to us. After a bit of torture, Democrats said the Republicans' rush to muscle the measure through Congress was aimed at giving them something to tout during the campaign, in which control of the House and Senate are at stake. Election day is November 7th. There's no question about the rush to pass this bill, which is the product of secret negotiations with the White House, is about serving a political agenda, said Senator Edward Kennedy, Democrat of Massachusetts. And again, it should be said, and the Democrats kowtowing to this and refusing to filibuster is also a part of their political agenda of trying to be tough on national security. Senate approval was the latest step in the remarkable journey that Bush has taken in shaping how the United States treats the terrorism suspects it has been holding, some for almost 5 years. The Supreme Court nullified Bush's initial system for trying detainees in June. Again, the New York Times doesn't mention he hasn't tried any detainees. I mean, I get to find that very peculiar. You don't hold people for 5 years if they're terrorists. You try them. At least in constitutional democracies, you do. Ergo, we are no longer a constitutional democracy, with or without this, even if they changed it immediately. The fact of the matter is, nobody is being tried. Nobody was tried. The closest we got to a trial was that this Hamdi, whose charges were dropped way down, and his trial has been delayed because they can't find anything. They had all kinds of charges about the massive terrorism he'd planned that all have been dropped now, and he's just accused of supporting an organization that they've labeled terrorist, and maybe getting some training overseas in some Muslim camp. I've got to check on the details of the Hamdi case to be sure I'm giving you very accurate information on that. While the Democrats warned the bill would open the way to abuse, Republicans said defeating the bill would put the country, it seems like the same litany here. Approving the bill before lawmakers leave for the elections has been a top priority for Republicans. I'm looking for some new information in here, which is why I'm kind of ho-humming my way through it. The habeas corpus language in this bill is as legally abusive of rights guaranteed in the Constitution as the actions at Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, and secret prisons that were physically abusive of detainees, said Senator Carl Levin, top Democrat on the Armed Services panel. Again, the guy who couldn't see his way clear to doing any filibustering on the issue. Let's listen to Representative Feingold, or actually Senator Feingold's remarks. Although he too, I think, has given up fighting this in terms of actually stopping the bill until after the elections for fear it will impact the elections. Here's the flaws in the Military Commissions Act that he writes about. Let me be clear. I welcome efforts to bring terrorists to justice. It is about time. The administration has too long been distracted by the war in Iraq from the fight against Al-Qaeda. We need a renewed focus on the terrorist networks that present the greatest threat to this country. But we wouldn't be where we are today, 5 years after September 11th, with not a single Guantanamo Bay detainee having been brought to trial, if the president had come to Congress in the first place rather than unilaterally creating military commissions that didn't comply with the law. The president wanted to act on his own, and he dared the Supreme Court to stop him, and he lost. The Hamdan decision was an historic rebuke to an administration that has acted for years as if it were above the law. Finally, only because he was essentially ordered to do so by the Supreme Court, the president has agreed to consult with Congress. Again, he's looking for Congress to have some power here, but I suspect if he had consulted with Congress, he would have gotten a series of restrictions on the rights of suspects that might not have looked too much different than what he eventually put into force, because he had a huge Republican majority anyway. So I don't know if I agree with Feingold about that. However, it's true. The president went off on his own and did his own thing because Congress and a lot of Democrats in Congress, but not Feingold, were silent on this as well as Republicans. I would have hoped that we would take this opportunity to pass legislation that allows us to proceed in accordance with our laws and our values. This is what separates America from our enemies. These trials, conducted appropriately, have the potential to demonstrate to the world that our democratic constitutional system of government is our greatest strength in fighting those who attacked us. And that is why I am saddened that I must oppose this legislation. Because the trials conducted under this legislation will send a very different signal to the world, one that I fear will put our own troops and personnel in jeopardy both now and in future conflicts. Take just a few examples. This legislation would permit an individual to be convicted on the basis of coerced testimony and hearsay, would not allow full judicial review of the conviction, and yet would allow someone convicted under these rules to be put to death. That is simply unacceptable. We would not stand for another country to try our citizens under those rules, and we should not stand for our own government to do so either. Not only that, this legislation would deny detainees at Guantanamo Bay and elsewhere, people who have been held for years but have not been tried or even charged with any crime, the ability to challenge their detention in court. Among its many flaws, this is the most troubling, that the legislation seeks to suspend the great writ of habeas corpus. The legislation before us is better than that originally proposed by the president, which would have largely codified the procedures the Supreme Court has already rejected, and that is thanks to the efforts of some of my Republican colleagues, for whom I have great respect and admiration. But that this bill remains deeply flawed, and I cannot support it. See, it's interesting Feingold talks about the bill being flawed. It seems to me anybody who has any balls or clear vision on this issue, it's not flawed. It is a direct slap and blow at constitutional democracy. It's not like it's attempting to do something positive and has a few errors in it. It's essentially a cover-up of a failed policy of hysteria, which has set the country in a permanent war mentality. And unless you counter the war mentality, you can talk all you want to, but you're not going to get to the root of the issue, and you will always be defeated by someone beating the war drum more loudly. That's the problem, even for someone like Feingold. If you have to sit around saying, I'm against the terrorists, and I favor national security, you need to talk directly about the kind of political opportunism, skullduggery, paranoia. And it's hard for me to find the right words to describe this. I'm kind of blown away by it all. One of the most disturbing provisions, Senator Feingold, Russ Feingold, continues in the speech he gave in the Senate, I think it was yesterday or today, of this bill eliminates the right of habeas corpus for those detained as enemy combatants, a list that the president makes up. I support an amendment by Senator Specter to strike that provision from the bill. I ask unanimous consent that my separate statement on that amendment be put on the record at the appropriate point. Habeas corpus is a fundamental recognition that in America, the government does not have the power to detain people indefinitely and arbitrarily, and that in America, the courts must have the power to review the legality of executive detention decisions. Habeas corpus is a long-standing, vital part of our American tradition and is enshrined in the U.S. Constitution. As a group of retired judges wrote to Congress, habeas corpus safeguards the most hallowed judicial role in our constitutional democracy, ensuring that no one is imprisoned unlawfully. This bill would fundamentally alter that historical equation. Faced with an executive branch that has detained hundreds of people without trial for years now, it would eliminate the right of habeas corpus. They did. It's eliminated, folks. When Bush signs the bill, the right is eliminated. Got no right to go before a court when the president calls you an unlawful combatant. This bill would fundamentally alter that historical equation. Under this legislation, some individuals at the designation of the executive branch alone could be picked up, even in the United States, and held indefinitely without trial and without any access whatsoever to the courts. They would not be able to call upon the laws of our great nation to challenge their detention because they would have been put outside the reach of the law. They have been put outside the reach of the law. That is unacceptable, and it almost surely violates our Constitution. But that determination will take years of protracted litigation, not to mention a Supreme Court that still has some balls left, or some ovaries. Why would we turn our back on hundreds of years of history and our nation's commitment to liberty, particularly when there is no good reason to do so? We should be working to provide a lawful system of military commissions so that those who have committed war crimes can be brought to justice. We can do that quite well without denying one of the most basic rights guaranteed by the Constitution to those held in custody of our government. Some have suggested that terrorists who take up arms against this country should not be allowed to challenge their detention in court. But that argument is circular. The writ of habeas corpus allows those who might be mistakenly detained to challenge their detention in court before a neutral decision maker. The alternative is to allow people to be detained indefinitely with no ability to argue that they are not, in fact, enemy combatants. Unless any of my colleagues can say with absolute certainty that everyone detained as an enemy combatant was correctly detained, and there is ample evidence to suggest that this is not the case, then we should make sure that people can't simply be locked up forever without court review based on someone slapping a terrorist label on them. There is another reason why we must not deprive detainees of habeas corpus, and that is the fact that the American system of government is supposed to set an example for the world as a beacon of democracy, and this provision will only serve to harm others' perception of our system of government. A group of retired diplomats sent a very moving letter explaining their concerns about this habeas stripping provision. Here is what they said. To proclaim democratic government to the rest of the world as the supreme form of government at the very moment we eliminate the most important avenue of relief from arbitrary governmental detention will not serve our interests in the larger world. Many, many dedicated patriotic Americans share these grave reservations about this particular provision of the bill. They have reservations not because they sympathize with suspected terrorists, not because they are soft on national security, not because they don't understand the threat we face. No, they and we in the Senate who support the Specter Amendment are concerned about this provision because we care about the Constitution, because we care about the image the America presents to the world as we fight the terrorists, because we know that the writ of habeas corpus provides one of the most significant protections of human freedom against arbitrary government action ever created. If we sacrifice it here, let's put it this way, now that we've sacrificed it here, we will head down a road that history will judge harshly and our descendants will regret. We must not imperil our proud history. We must not abandon the great writ. We must not jeopardize our nation's proud traditions and principles by suspending the writ of habeas corpus and permitting our government to pick people up off the street, even in U.S. cities, and detain them indefinitely without court review. That is not what America is all about. Unfortunately, that is now what America is exactly about. Unfortunately, The suspension of the Great Writ is not the only problem with this legislation, nor is it the only instance where the legislation goes beyond establishing military commissions to include unnecessary provisions with deeply troubling results. The administration has spoken about the need for this legislation to bring clarity to the War Crimes Act, which makes it a crime to violate Common Article 3 of the Geneva Conventions. It is proposed we specifically list the actions that would be considered crimes under that law. On the face of it, that certainly sounds reasonable. But when you look at this legislation, you realize that the modifications it makes only muddy the water. Not only that, it does so retroactively. The key problem is that in the definition of cruel or inhuman treatment, this is a critical definition because it is the provision that determines which coercive interrogation techniques amount to crimes under U.S. law. But because of the complex structure of this section, it is very difficult to understand what the new definition would criminalize, and I am concerned that any ambiguity may be interpreted too narrowly by some. The definition incorporates several terms that in turn have their own separate definitions, and even as one new definition, it doesn't even go into effect until the date of enactment, even though the rest of the amendments to the War Crimes Act are made retroactive to 1997. Frankly, the new prohibition is extremely unclear, and we have already heard different interpretations of it from senators and administration officials who negotiated the language. If our goal is to give unambiguous guidance to our personnel and the courts, this does not do it. In other words, this is a provision which essentially allows people to torture other people and then claim immunity because it's sufficiently ambiguous what constitutes cruel or inhuman treatment. It covers the ass of the Bush administration and, for that matter, the Clinton administration officials. The way the provision is drafted, it even seems designed to grant immunity to senior officials who authorize coercive interrogation techniques. We should just follow the approach originally endorsed by the Senate Armed Services Committee, which would have applied the language of the McCain Amendment. I am also very concerned that the definition of unlawful enemy combatant that is included in this legislation and about the corresponding issue of the jurisdiction of the military commissions. This legislation has been justified as necessary to allow our government to prosecute Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and other dangerous men recently transferred to Guantanamo Bay. Yet, if you look at the fine print of this legislation, it becomes clear that it is much, much broader than that. It would permit trial by military commission not just for those accused of serious terrorist crime, but also individuals including legal permanent residents of this country who are alleged to have, quote, purposefully and materially supported hostilities, quote unquote, against the United States or its allies. So if I send, Hezbollah a check so they can rebuild a bridge in Lebanon, I can be disappeared in the United States because I'm materially supporting a group that the United States considers terrorist. Watch out. This is extremely broad, and key terms go undefined. And by including hostilities not only against the United States, but also against its allies, the bill allows the U.S. to hold and try by military commission individuals who have never engaged, directly or indirectly, in any action against the United States. Not only that, but the bill would also define as an unlawful enemy combatant, subject to trial by military commission, anyone, quote, who has been determined to be an unlawful enemy combatant by a combatant status review tribunal or another competent tribunal established under the authority of the President or the Secretary of Defense. This essentially grants a blank check to the executive branch to decide entirely on its own who can be tried by military commission. I'm reading from the Counterpunch website here on Free Radio Santa Cruz at 101.1 FM. The speech of Senator Russell Feingold in the Senate in the hours before the United States gave up the writ of habeas corpus, the right to be free from cruel and unusual punishment, and the right to be free from unlawful searches and seizures. You know, those days when you used to talk about the Constitution as though it really meant something. Welcome to the new United States. Reading some more here. And you can get this again on the Counterpunch website, www.counterpunch.org. I want to make sure I haven't lost my place here. Hang on just a second. Yes, it allows the Secretary of Defense or the President's Tribunal Commission to decide whether you're an unlawful combatant or not. If we are going to establish military commissions outside of our traditional military and civilian justice systems, at a minimum, we should explicitly limit their application to the worst of the worst, those who pose a serious threat to our country. We shouldn't leave it up to just one branch of government to make these incredibly important decisions. The bulk of this legislation concerns the structure and process of military commissions. Although we heard from many witnesses at congressional hearings this summer that we should hew as closely as possible to the long-established military system of justice, this bill instead essentially starts from scratch and creates a whole new structure. It does so despite Justice Kennedy's wise advice in his concurrence of Hamdan, where he said the Constitution is best preserved by reliance on standards tested over time and insulated from the pressures of the moment. So we've got to point out here, there's already a system of military justice for trying people who are in the military. And it doesn't give you the kinds of protections that you would have in the civilian courts. I'm not terribly conversant with it, but that's my general impression. That's not good enough or bad enough for the Republicans and President Bush and for the Democrats who refuse to filibuster this bill. They want a whole new system. Essentially, they want to ratify after the fact what has been done for the last 5 years with some face-saving changes, but not any significant change. They don't want to go to the military system, which allows for pretty rigorous decisions by essentially conservative military individuals. We're not talking about wild liberals and Islamic fundamentalists. We're talking about people who are probably of the opposite frame of mind. That's not good enough. The executive branch here wants the power to be able to hold a person indefinitely that it designates as an unlawful enemy combatant. Doesn't just want the power. When Bush signs this bill, he'll have the power. Unless we, the community, we, the nation, resist this bill. And that's what we got to start thinking about. Resisting this. For example, this legislation creates a presumption of the admissibility of hearsay evidence. Hearsay evidence means you don't bring in the original witness. You bring in somebody who said, oh, this person said such and such. In courts of law in Santa Cruz, you got to bring in the witness. You got to say, here's the witness against you. So, for example, my case was dismissed, finally. My disrupting a city council meeting was dismissed because we demanded a speedy trial after the prosecution kept asking for delays because it wanted to have its witness, Deputy Chief Kevin Vogel, present in the courtroom to testify against me. We had no problem with that, but he kept leaving town and they kept delaying the trial. But they couldn't bring in somebody who said, well, the chief would have said this, or the deputy chief would have said this, and he can't do that. You have to have the witness there and subject to cross-examination by the defense. That's the civilian way. And there's a similar procedure, I believe, in the military, I would imagine, although it may be looser because there might be tighter, particularly national security matters and so forth. But now, this new bill allows hearsay evidence. He said you were a terrorist. That's the testimony. How can you prove it's wrong? I don't know. You can't talk to the guy. You can't cross-examine her. Not possible. Now, it is true that because of the exigencies of war and active combat situations, Senator Feingold continues, hearsay rules may need to be structured differently, but they are in our criminal courts. Now, differently than they are in our criminal courts. But the rules laid out in the Universal Code of Military Justice, the UCMJ, are drafted to handle these same exigencies. While there may need to be some adjustments to the UCMJ hearsay rules, we need not discard them altogether. The presumption against hearsay is a fundamental protection built into our existing legal structures to ensure that proceedings yield a just and fair result. Yet in this provision and elsewhere, this legislation erodes such protections, going far beyond what is allowed in the military system and without justification. Even more disturbing is that the bill appears to permit individuals to be convicted and even sentenced to death on the basis of coerced testimony. According to the legislation, statements obtained through cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment as long as it was obtained prior to December 2005, when the McCain Amendment became law, would apparently be admissible in many instances in these military commissions. Now, it is true that the bill would require the commission to find these statements have sufficient reliability and probative value. But why would we go down this road of trying to convict people based on statements obtained through cruel, inhuman, or degrading interrogation techniques? Either we are a nation that stands against this type of cruelty and for the rule of law, or we are not. We can't have it both ways. And I'll simply add myself, testimony under torture is not reliable. I mean, I haven't studied it, but I think a good argument can be made for the case that you will say whatever they want you to if they'll just remove those burning things from under your fingernails, if they'll simply stop putting you in that stress position that you have to stand in for 14 hours, if they'll simply let you sleep. You'll tell them, oh, yeah, yeah, oh, I went to Afghanistan, yeah, I was in a camp, yeah, yeah. And if there's a motivation for interrogators to get information from people to please their superiors, they will be suggesting things to people. Police do this all the time. Weren't you there? Didn't you do this? Admit it. Because they're looking for a guilty person. They're looking for people who will incriminate themselves. And it's not just that it's not honorable to torture people, it's not effective. And that's not even mentioned here. Continues, the idea that coerced treatments can be used as long as they are obtained long enough ago is appalling. It seems to assume that there is a lack of clarity in the law prior to December 2005. In fact, there was a great clarity until this administration decided to invent a narrow definition of torture that has never been used or accepted anywhere in the civilized world. The McCain Amendment was needed to get this administration to return to the law. It was a repudiation of the legal theories of the infamous Bybee memo, which the administration even said it was withdrawing once it was publicly revealed. Its enactment should not now be used as a dividing point before which evidence obtained through cruel and inhuman treatment can be used in court. At times, but it is, that passed today. At times of great adversity, the strength of a nation's convictions is tested and its true character revealed. If we sacrifice or qualify our principles in the face of the tremendous challenge we face from terrorists who want to destroy America, we will be making a terrible mistake. If we cloak cruel or degrading interrogations done in the name of American safety with euphemisms like alternative techniques, if we create arbitrary dates for when differing degrees of morality will apply, we will have betrayed our principles and ourselves. Statements obtained through such techniques should not be admissible, even against the most vicious killers in the world, in proceedings held by the government of the United States of America, period. In sum, this legislation is very troubling and in many respects legally suspect. I fear the end result of this legislation will only be more delay. It will surely be subject to further legal challenge and may squander another 4 or 5 years while cases work their way through the courts again. We can and must fight terrorism aggressively without compromising fundamental American values. We must remember what the Army Judge Advocate General told me at a Judiciary Committee hearing this summer, that the U.S. should set an example for the world. We must carefully consider the effect on the way our own soldiers will be treated. In closing, let me do something I don't do very often, and that is, quote, John Ashcroft, former Attorney General. According to the United States, the New York Times, at a private meeting of high-level officials in 2003 about the military commission structure, then Attorney General Ashcroft said, Timothy McVeigh, who bombed the federal building in St. Louis, I believe, and was, I think, put to death for it later, was one of the worst killers in U.S. history, but at least we had fair procedures for him. How sad that this Congress would seek to pass legislation about which the same cannot be said. He's sad. I'm enraged and, frankly, I don't know. To say I'm despondent is not accurate. I'm going to, you know, go back to living my life when I leave this text. I'm not going to, you know, it's just another political speech that I've read. But it is a very, very significant shift, it seems to me, in American, the rights that we have, or that we theoretically have, if we have enough money
to pursue them. And it puts everything up for grabs if we allow this to proceed. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.1 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert Norse. This is Bathrop's Pierre's Broadsides. And, well, let's hear a little more from the anti-war protesters. And again, tomorrow, Students Against War will be meeting up on campus at the Bay Tree Conference Center from 5 to 7 if you want to check them out.
I am here as part of the die-in.
You're trying still to remember. Alive. What does this mean?
Yeah, this means we Americans are still alive, many of us, but we're still responsible.
Now, there's local vets organizations. Any vets come out either in singly or in numbers to support this opposition to the war in Iraq?
We know that many vets are with us in opposition to the war. We've made lots of contacts, but...
Didn't notice any today particularly.
No. Right.
How was this advertised in the Sentinel and other... How widely was this event?
The Sentinel did run a one-column announcement about a week ago that had all the... This is a week-long series of events. There's been people standing in corners, 35 corners on Friday. There's been a silent...
Here in Santa Cruz and elsewhere, other cities even more, right?
Exactly. That was here in Santa Cruz. There are hundreds of cities that have this National Declaration of Peace campaign asking and pushing our members of Congress to stop funding the war.
All right. And there's some young people of color who are giving you the sign up, thumbs up, or the victory. Now, it's not the victory. It's the peace sign. That's what it is. We've been talking with
Peter Klotz Chamberlain.
Of course. Who else would it be?
Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Talking with Lydia Blanchard. Lydia, you've been at this protest for the last hour, or were you here pretty much around noon when it started?
Yep.
And how long did people die?
I don't know. I would guess about 20 minutes at least.
Are you one of the dead?
Yes, I'm one of the dead. I'm right there.
And you weren't arrested for somebody chalking around you in violation of the city code section?
Yes.
I may have to make a citizen's arrest, but
okay.
Luckily I wasn't here to witness the crime.
I've been arrested with you before, but with you.
Well, there you are. Of course, as it should be. What's next on the agenda? This actually will be played on Thursday, and I don't know if the Declaration of Peace events go on beyond Thursday. So.
I think they end Thursday, yeah.
But the war, unfortunately, will probably not end Thursday.
No.
Again, talking with Lydia Blanchard. Lydia, you are professionally these days a...
psychotherapist.
And have you offered your services to the national administration to help out the politicians who are so aggressive?
I have an interest in doing that, but...
They haven't contacted you yet.
They haven't gotten back to me. No, our democracy is threatened by what's happening. It's not only threatened, we are threatening it because we are responsible for and to our democracy, to our government. We're responsible for making them meet our wills and wishes. This is an absolutely tragic situation and the very, very most shocking and scandalous administration the country's ever had.
Now, you were probably protesting this a year ago and 2 years ago, I imagine.
Yeah.
Do you see any difference here in Santa Cruz, smaller, bigger, stronger, weaker, difference in quality or tone?
Well, there's they've gotten SAMFAR signature for the Declaration of Peace. I was arrested out of SAMFAR's office during the Kosovo attacks in spring of 99. The difference I see is that FAR has budged.
Voting for the main military appropriation, I think, though.
Yeah, I don't think he's ever seen a weapon that he didn't like. And
if you join me, we can go to FAR's office and send him a message, possibly do a tie-in there.
That's where we're going right now.
Are you going to FAR's office?
Down to the county building.
Oh, I'll have to join
it's
you.
It's closed. It's, well, no, it isn't closed. It's noon. But Yeah, we don't know. We haven't made any real plans for what will happen there.
Well, we'll see what happens. I guess our folks just are going to grow as a group, it looks like.
And unfortunately, though, I believe they went to the county building. People were heading in that direction, but then what I finally heard was that the rally dispersed prior to getting to the county building. If anybody has any new information on that, please call in 427-3772, plus any upcoming anti-war rallies, protests, sacking of federal buildings, what you will, let us know so that we can be there to stop you from engaging in any criminal vandalism that may come up so we can protect our government at all costs, or at least register our concerns and protests and get the word out to the Santa Cruz community. There's more on this, and in fact, I really have a long piece I was going to do on breaking events in L.A. around its sleeping ban. And I'm just very briefly, you may have read a very short blurb in the Sentinel 2 days ago, which talked about the L.A. city attorney unilaterally deciding to do a 90-day moratorium on police arrests in the Skid Row area, which is a fairly large area in Los Angeles. It consists of dozens of blocks, as I look at the map, from 2nd to 7th. It's kind of hard to read this map, and it's a pretty might even be the area the size of Santa Cruz or larger. It's a large downtown area, and the size of the Santa Cruz downtown, certainly. Jones' decision back in April ruled that homeless people, because they're not allowed access to shelter facilities, can't be arrested simply for finding their own and for sleeping where they need to at night between the hours of 9 and 6. The ACLU won that in a federal case ruling, a 2-1 ruling that actually is would have been precedent all over the western states and California and Santa Cruz, except it was appealed by the L.A. City Council. Now, about a week ago, the mayor of Los Angeles, the city attorney, the ACLU, a federal mediator, and the police chief of Los Angeles came up with a proposal that that they would drop the lawsuit, come to a settlement with the ACLU, that they would, because more and more homeless people were coming into LA, were becoming visible in LA. I don't have evidence whether they were coming in, as Mike Rotkin might suggest, or whether they were just being visible. I have heard people have been in LA down. One woman was down to LA recently saying, was it a woman or a man? I don't recall. But that person told me that on driving from the airport, Linda LeMaster, who had gone to a conference down there, that you don't have to go to Skid Row to see people sleeping on the streets block after block after block because of lack of housing and so forth. Because so many people were coming into were appearing in the Skid Row area, joining the tent city for housing, for shelter, for, for community, for protection. I suppose residents say for dope, for wild all-night parties, for prostitution scams. I mean, who knows exactly all the details, but certainly for the right to sleep legally somewhere. And although theoretically it's illegal, the police, I understand, have not been too vigorous in enforcing lest they get seriously held seriously legally liable, because even though the federal court's decision is on hold, it could well be upheld at the higher level if it's accepted at all for hearing by the en banc panel, the larger panel of federal judges that is being told or asked to consider it by the L.A. Authorities. So they brought a proposal to city council, the mayor and the city attorney, conservative people saying, we'll agree, let's stop the lawsuit. Will agree to allow people to sleep in this limited Skid Row area only during the nighttime hours. And during the daytime hours, their tents will have to come down, and they can be busted for camping and so forth. Not entirely to my liking, frankly, but it was a proposal they brought to city council, voted down around September 19th, 20th, 21st. Now the city attorney of Los Angeles, as I understand it from this very brief article in the Sentinel, which I've not been able to find a reference for in the L.A. Times, strangely enough, is that the city attorney has now unilaterally declared, even though the city council didn't vote for it, he has declared there will be a 90-day moratorium on police arrests in this period of time between the hours of 9 o'clock in the evening and 6 o'clock in the morning. Now, it's interesting. In Santa Cruz, we have a law that criminalizes sleeping from 11 o'clock at night to 8:30 in the morning.
And I ran into my old pal, Ryan Coonerty, boy councilman, as Becky Johnson calls him, at the county building, right at the end of a Huff meeting. And Huff meets every Wednesday, for those of you who want to jump on board the Huff train, at 9:30 in the morning, right at the outside the coffee cart area, the county building, and the atrium area down on Ocean Street, at the right next to the courthouse. So check it out. But anyway, Ryan Coonerty was there, and I said, Ryan, I want to ask you a question or two here. And he generously agreed after making me wait 15 minutes to allow me to have 2 or 3 minutes with him. And I asked him, here's this decision that the city attorney of Los Angeles, a huge city with all kinds of homeless people, has essentially an identical situation with Santa Cruz. They're asking that between the hours of 9 and 6, people be allowed to sleep in one area of the city at least, because there's no shelter. In Santa Cruz, we have a ban on sleeping between 11 and 8:30 in the morning, no shelter for more than 42 people, and 1,500 to 2,000 homeless people that don't have shelter, and no place to go. So how about a similar understanding with some folks here so that we can head off another lawsuit, and so we can, more important, give people a chance to have some safety and some sleep tonight? And his response was, it's not at all the same. Our law is different. He didn't explain exactly how it was different. The law, actually, if you're an attorney, it is a different law. They have a much more strict law, but which says you can't sleep, sit, or lie anywhere in Los Angeles. But the fact of the matter is, we have a law that says you can't sleep in the city of Santa Cruz at night. And that's to say that that's okay, because then you can go sleep in the day, as Judge Kangaroo Kelly put it in 1997 in the famous Dan Hopkins case, is outrageous, because people need to be able to sleep at night. And Coonerty, who claims to be a teacher of constitutional law up at the university, and who is himself an attorney, that he would make such a claim publicly shows to you the level to which we have fallen in local politics. So the other thing I wanted to talk about very, very briefly is that I got confirmation from attorney Ben Rice, who's defending Roger Minch. Roger Minch is the man I mentioned earlier on the show, is being prosecuted for providing medical marijuana to people with medical marijuana cards in his organization called the Hemporium up in Felton. He has been arrested for this. He was held. You've heard him on free radio. If you listen to some of the earlier shows, you can go to them. They're archived at huffsantacruz.org. And he's facing a trial for 5 felonies around this issue. Transportation, cultivation, sales of marijuana. And the claim of the district attorney's office, Bob Lee's district attorney's office, and Sheriff Robbins' sheriffs, is that you can't legally provide marijuana or sell marijuana unless you are a collective that is serving only your own members. So by this argument, this was what I got from reading the transcript of the preliminary hearing, which was held in April, Greenway and any other club up and down this California, except for a collective like WHAM, would be illegal and subject to raid, confiscation, and closing. This is liberal Santa Cruz we're talking about. And I couldn't believe this, so I called Ben over during the Huff meeting. He happened to be walking by. We meet right outside the court area where people come out and get coffee at the coffee cart. And I said, is this true, Ben? And he said, it is exactly true. That's exactly what they argued. They argued that they can arrest anybody, any club, close any doors, unless you are a collective. Even though this clearly goes against both judicial findings and the wording of the state law, SB 420, and the Proposition 215. So I hope that this is going to show up on community TV. Ben said he talked about it at a forum at the library, the law library downstairs in the county building. Unfortunately, when I contacted community TV, it's only going to show up on October 17th, and I believe his trial is like the 15th. So I'm really hoping that this issue gets out, because I'm amazed that I'm the only person talking about it. It's just, I mean, Ben Rice should be throwing press conferences. Andrea Tischler, Anita Henry, Valerie Corral, Theodora Carey, we all should be out there demanding these charges be dropped, if only to protect other distribution people. I know there's a difference of opinion between people about the profiteering off of marijuana. I have the same concern. But my greater concern is that there's no access to it to people, and that innocent people are going to suffer, and that this just builds up the law enforcement bureaucracy, which is pursuing a wasteful evil. I guess I'm picking up Bush's axis of evil language. I do see it as evil. Approach to the whole question of how do you deal with, it's not even drug abuse, it's medicine use. It's very bizarre. All right, I'm going to put on some interviews, and it'll be going the more of the die-in until Uncle Dennis sets up, and hope to catch you again on Sunday when I come back, 9:30 in the morning, maybe even a little earlier if I invade Thomas Levitt's show and we chatter there. He has a show called The Wake-Up Call at 7:30. So come on back then, or give me a call on the Huff line at 423-HUFF. Also keep an ear out at Lulu Carpenter's. I've gotten reports of Shane, of Donna and Donna Dice, and Shane, if you know them, a couple. Donna's with the Santa Cruz Tenants' Rights Union. Shane is an activist. You see him downtown with his bunny. He's also a patient with AIDS. Apparently, he claims being harassed by Manafree Srinath, the owner of Lulu Carpenter's. I haven't heard from Manafree on this issue, and I invite him to come on the air. If anybody has any complaints about Lulu Carpenter's, I want to hear about it. Plus, I want to hear about concerns about the Homeless Service Center. How's the food out there? How are the policies? What do people think about the ban from the day that homeless people face there, apparently for the convenience of the staff? Let me know about that. Give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Thanks for being on this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Or I should say, I'll thank myself for being on this edition, and I'll hope you guys and you gals out there enjoyed it.
Okay, well, I will stick with you. Thank you,
Robert.
One lone victim here, sir. How long have you been dead?
I do not know, but there's a scroll to represent 43,000 civilians. I'm just a young person who died.
You have a photo of a
people. So many people died. It's really sad. Do you want to describe this person in the photo?
Like a young, I would imagine, Iraqi girl, maybe aged 4 or 5.
Yeah, I can't tell, but their stories should be told. It's really sad. I mean, even Americans, there are more people dead now and Americans killed than were killed in the World Trade Center.
That'll show them.
Yeah. And as you probably heard on today's news, that some government report has now come out. The generals are criticizing Rumsfeld because we knew that the war in Iraq would encourage terrorism to make a worse situation for the United States than before the war. We're in big trouble. We got a lot of people angry at the United States because of those 43,000 civilians that we know about that have been killed in this war. We have to stop it.
Thank you.
Hey there. Well, I'm not a student.
Well, then I can talk to you anyway because you look younger than most of us oldies. But so, are you with SAW, Students Against War? Or not?
Yeah, I work with them.
And where have they been all summer?
On vacation. Yeah. Most of the students have been on a vacation. As an organization, I think we weren't as functional during the summer, but different individuals have been working on different aspects of what SAW does work on.
Now, you'll be holding your first meeting.
The first meeting is this Friday at 5 p.m.
And where will that be?
That will be at the Bay Tree Bookstore Conference Room.
Which is where on campus?
On UCSC campus, at the center of campus, where
the commons used to be, the dining
the
area.
The union and, the grad common.
So, I know SAW was a somewhat significant organization last year, but rarely came off campus. I guess you don't know until they meet, but have you had any preliminary plans for any actions upcoming?
Some members of Students Against War will be at the Military Recruitment Center tomorrow at Capitola. And
What time will that be?
That will be at 10 o'clock.
So by the time this airs, that'll, of course, pass. That will be 10 o'clock, September 26th, Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
And is there plans for an action like a civil disobedient action there, or are people just going to volunteer to join the Army, or what's going to happen?
I think it's not that well organized at the moment, and I think it'll come into shape as people sort of make decisions on the spot.
Now, is this a SAW activity only, or has the Declaration of Peace protester folks been involved as well?
This is actually as part of the Declaration of Peace. It hasn't been planned very well, and it's more of just getting people out there because there will be a similar military recruitment center protest in San Francisco. And also to support that and show that Santa Cruz will have a similar action.
And we want to thank Reverend Norse for his fine show tonight. He'll be back on Sunday sometime in the morning, sometime after 7:30 in the morning. Scheduled to be on the air around 9:30, but he's been known to barge into other people's shows and, you know, take over the microphone. And, oh, well, that's Reverend Norse. And you'll have more of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides on another day. Thanks, Robert. See you later.
Take care of yourself.
All right. I'm Uncle Dennis. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1, www.freakradio.org. And, of course, this is a show called From the Cream to the Dregs. And tonight, it's going to be 100% vinyl, no DVDs. So prepare yourself for the scratchy record syndrome. Thank you.
table. table tells a tale of times when kings and queens sipped wine from goblets of gold, and the brave would lead their ladies from out the room to Arby's cool. A time of valor and legends born, a time when honor meant much more to a man than life, and the days you only strive to tell right from wrong.